Welcome to the Church Podcast, talking all things ministry so that you can do church better. I'm your co-host, Chris Wesley, and I'm joined by John Rinaldo. John, how is it going, man?
It's good. It's another early morning for me, but ready to rock and roll because we talked for like 15, 20 minutes before we started recording anything about all the things that we want to talk about in this podcast, which was kind of fun.
I know. We're throwing around a couple of different ideas here. And of course, before we actually get into that, if you guys have topics or things that you want us to talk about, shoot us an email at questions@thechurchpodcast.org. Questions@thechurchpodcast.org. Because this isn't just a show where we want to talk about what we want to talk about. We can do that 15 minutes before we record. But it's a show where we want to, again, help you do ministry and church better. So definitely send us your questions to the questions@thechurchpodcast.org. But one of those things we were kind of talking about beforehand were our Fitbits. Not because John and I are a bunch of weekend warriors by any means.
Hey, I got 21,000 steps yesterday. So boom.
Wow, that's pretty impressive. Actually, when I was on vacation in Paris, I got my personal record, 31,000 steps.
Oh, nice.
31,000 steps. That was more than when I went to Disney World, where at Disney World, we were averaging about 24, 25,000 steps.
Nice.
So anyway, we're talking about our Fitbits because John was noticing that mine was liturgically correct, which if you're listening to this, we obviously record these ahead of time, and it's actually Good Friday. And so my Fitbit is red. And I told John, I intentionally do that. I have Fitbits for every liturgical season of the year. Speaking of red,
he also has a red shirt on. He's got red shorts on and red shoes on as well.
Yeah, that's true. And I plan on not leaving the house at all.
And I'm drinking a red liquid. That's the only red I have on me.
That looks like whiskey, and that's pretty early for you.
No, that's definitely not whiskey, though.
Okay.
You're trying to get me in trouble here.
Hey, it depends on what time they're listening to it. If it's 4 o'clock in the afternoon, it's okay. But yes. You did allude to the fact that we're recording in the morning. But
exactly.
Anyway, yeah. It's 12 o'clock somewhere. But anyway, wow, this is a hard transition. But actually, another season of red is Pentecost, right? So red is definitely a part of Pentecost and some of the holy days that are coming up. And, you know, when we think about Pentecost, another thing that comes up is confirmation. And that's what we want to talk about. Not specifically confirmation. We actually want to talk about the sacraments. And we want to talk about like kind of a niche part of the sacrament. It's not really a niche part, an important part, but it is just a specific part, not the preparation, but the actual celebration, the actual mass that comes with baptism, first communions, and confirmation specifically. We're not going to talk about the Easter Vigil per se for RCIA, but confirmation and first Holy Communion, and then maybe a little bit of baptism there. And, you know, again, not to say that there's anything wrong with the sacraments or there's anything wrong with the liturgy. But there are a couple of things that we've noticed over time that, like, yeah, could be used to improve. Like, and something we've talked about here before is the fact that those are definitely evangelization opportunities. And so we want to talk about that. But also kind of ask the question of, like, why do we do that? And what is that a big T tradition or is that a little T tradition? So, you know, one thing that, John, you were talking about before we got on here is how you don't have your baptismal certificate framed and hanging over your fireplace in your living room. And I was shocked by that.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I do have my baptismal certificate, but I had to go search for it. So I had, you know, when I got married, in the church, I had to, of course, get all my certificates. And so I had to go hunt around and I got my three sacraments of initiation at three different churches.
Wow.
And so I had
church
to go,
hopper.
Yeah, well, when I was growing up, we moved a lot, you know, and it just worked out that way. And so it's so funny. So I went to baptism first, right? Because when you know, basically that's the parish that houses the official record, you know, of your sacraments, you know? And so I went and I got my baptismal certificate, but they had no record of my confirmation or first communion. I'm like, man, okay. So then I called my first communion parish and said, can I get a copy of my first communion certificate? And they had me on record and they sent me one in the email. And then I called my parish of confirmation. And I said, I need my copy of confirmation. They looked at the records and they actually had a hard time finding the records. So they were like, are you sure it was confirmed? I'm like, dude, I use my confirmation story all the time when I do workshops. So yes, 100% sure I got confirmed there, right? And so they found it and they sent me a copy. So now I've got all three certificates. But yeah, I had to go searching for it and just so I can get married in the church. So God, glad I got that one done, man.
Well, I can have you beat. Not only did I receive all three sacraments in three different churches, I received them in three different countries. So,
Wait,
because I grew up
side of your story I don't know about.
Well, you know, I grew up overseas. I grew up in Japan and Hong Kong and New Zealand and the States. Actually, I take that back. Two different countries, because I was born in Jersey, and the parish where I was baptized is the one I ultimately got confirmed at. But I received my first communion in Hong Kong.
Wow. Are you military family? Yeah. Is that why?
No. Actually, my family, my dad was in international marketing with American Express. Oh. So he just moved around a lot.
Wow. I didn't know that.
Actually, okay. I was a child star and, you know, had a record deal in Tokyo for a while.
Yeah, nice.
So it's one of those things where I couldn't tell you. You know, it's funny when I think back to confirmation. I mean, obviously that parish, fortunately, that I got confirmed at is where I was baptized. So they have that record there. But I can't remember if they asked for my first Holy Communion certificate. And I'm sure my mom, being the uber Catholic that she is, she had it on file. In fact, this is a good question to throw out to people there. Where do you have your sacramental certificates, you know, if you still have them? For me, it's in a lockbox safe next to like my social security cards. I shouldn't be telling people this. It's located.
It's in underneath. The closet. Here's a combo.
But it's in all. It's by all these bonds and gold bricks. But you know, it's funny. Actually, though, I have to share this. The best story I've ever heard about a baptismal certificate. So this priest I work with, Father Sam, he's kind of hilarious. He's an associate at our parish, but he goes around and, you know, to the hospitals to administer, you know, the sacraments and everything. And we were talking about, and I know I'm going to scandalize people here. We're talking about fake IDs one day. And he was saying, like, when he was a kid, once to get into a bar, he had his baptismal certificate with him to use as, like, he forged a baptismal certificate. Sorry, let me rephrase that. A baptismal certificate so he could be let into a bar. And it worked. And I was like, one, you were destined to be a priest because you thought like fake ID was forging a baptismal certificate. And then secondly, like that bartender or that bouncer must have been Catholic to like see that as viable proof, not a government document, but a baptismal certificate. So if you are under 21, I'm not condoning that. I'm not saying that you should go and steal a baptismal certificate and use it as a way of fake ID. But
you decide to do that, please let us know the outcome of that, because that's hilarious.
I will pay your bail if you get arrested.
Careful.
Yeah. Well, within $50. So, yeah. So I mean, like, anyway. So why are we talking about certificates? Well, for me, like, you know, one of the things that I have a problem with when it comes to the masses that we do for, especially First Communion and Confirmation, is how much they look like a graduation. In fact, the subtitle to my book, Rebuilding Confirmation, is like, we don't need another graduation. And, you know, I'll never forget this one time I was helping out this parish with their confirmation mass. And the point person was just like, all right. And then after you guys are done, you know, you're going to come here for a reception and receive your diploma and then go home. And he like meant diploma in jest, but I was just like, you know, here we are as a church working so hard to tell these kids, this is not the end, right? Confirmation is not the end. That's not a celebration for something that's ending, but it's more of a commissioning to going forth. And so for me, that certificate, and one of the things John and I were talking about before we hit record here was, just like, how is it really a logistical piece of the puzzle, or is it really what's the significance behind it? And so I joke that John doesn't have his framed, but in all seriousness, I guess I would agree that I would have less of a problem with the certificate if people would frame them and hold them at the same esteem as their graduate degree or their
So, yeah. Undergraduate. So you're saying, though, then that you're wondering whether we should be giving certificates at all because of the message that it shows, like a diploma, right? That this is
right.
Especially confirmation, right? Because right. that being if you're not restored order, if you kind of separate all the sacraments out, confirmation is last, you know, that is kind of like, this is it. All right, here you go. So it's really... Right. It's not theological per se as it is, you know, really kind of practical in terms of, well, maybe it is theological. I don't know, you know, so I'm just trying to get deeper into kind of what you're saying here.
Well, and I think the reason why I'm harping on certificates is because if confirmation and First Communion are going to be this evangelization, we talk about how it's an evangelization opportunity for families. And I do want to talk about that in a little bit, but I think primarily it's a commissioning, right? Especially confirmation. It's a commissioning. Like, we are sending these disciples out into the world. And so giving them a diploma or a certificate is, in my mind, sending the wrong message. Mm-hmm. You know, more so than like having a little reception afterwards, more so than, you know, just like even how the preparation is formed, that certificate is a way of just saying like, all right, you've completed this task. Like, you know, congratulations.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So it begs the question, why do we do the certificates at all, right? And is that a big T tradition, something that we have to do or should do, or is that a small T tradition, something that we've just always done?
Right.
And, you know, I wonder, I'm thinking back, I'm wondering how many people actually do get the certificates. You know, I think baptismal certificate is kind of a no-brainer. You really kind of get that, but I'm thinking back on, you know, whether I even received, I know I got copies of it later in life, but I wonder if right. I even received it and if that's something people even do.
Well, let's do this. Let's put a poll up on the churchpodcast.org page and we'll ask two polls. Like, one, do you still have your certificates?
Yeah.
And, you know, this will be anonymous. And then secondly, do you think, does your church still issue certificates? Mm-hmm. Yes or no? And yeah. We'll just kind of do a basic poll that way. And see what people say, and it'll be anonymous. And maybe that's something we can share on a future podcast, or at least to our email subscribers for sure.
Yeah, that'd be good.
But yeah, let's talk about like, all right, so how do we move it from a commencement ceremony to more of a commissioning? You know, because one of the things that is going on here in Baltimore is this pastoral planning. And one of the huge values of the pastoral planning is looking at opportunities to commission, right? So I think we can agree that within the liturgy itself, that nothing really has to change there in regards to the anointing and readings and things like that. But what are other things that we could do?
I don't have enough power to actually change that stuff anyway.
Well, we wouldn't address that at all, because I think, like, even though we have total control over this podcast, we would get shut down somehow, right? Like,
this is the only thing in my life I have any control over, and yeah, I'm not even sure it's that much. So.
Right. So we're not even gonna poke that there. But
yeah, there you go.
Not that we would want to.
nice.
Not that we would want to. Don't read into that a little bit more. But what are ways that we can make it less of a commencement and more of a commissioning in regards to, especially when it comes to confirmation?
Yeah, and so I look back at the decision I made. I'm going to go back to baptism here for a second, connected to confirmation. My wife and I intentionally made a decision when we got our three kids baptized to go out of, I'm using this in quotes, out of the norm of the parish and get baptized within the Sunday liturgical experience, within the Sunday mass that we typically go to. The reason is because that particular mass is our community. We wanted our community to be around us while we go through the step of baptizing this child, because ultimately this community, this village, is going to play a huge role in supporting my wife and I in raising my children up in the faith. Okay, connected to communion and confirmation. For me, one of the ways to move away from this idea of commencement is, if possible, and it's really not possible in most cases, so I hate to say it this way, logistically it's a challenge, can we move the sacraments into the actual Sunday liturgical experience? Because we're all about community, right? You know, that's what it means to be Catholic. It's not just me and God, but it's we, it's us, it's everybody in this journey together supporting each other. And it's true, it takes a village. you know, to raise up a child in the way of faith. So what are we saying when we take the confirmation or the communion experience out of Sunday and do it at another time, right? A special liturgy, a special commencement, a special graduation that's out of the norm of what we would typically do.
Right. Now,
practically speaking, I know that's very difficult. Like I look at my parish here locally, we have probably 6 first Eucharist masses, right? Because they've got hundreds and hundreds of kids and the space is only big enough to handle all that. And so there's no way that you could do it on a Sunday mass, you know, and still fit all the people that have come on Sunday mass, you know? And so that's kind of a cool problem to have, you know, you just don't have enough space, you know, for that. But again, I think the community, the church community misses out on this because the sacraments are so beautiful and so awesome and that the people on a regular Sunday don't get a chance to engage in the sacraments, the sacramental mass itself, mm-hmm. and then to support those young people in their journey as well. So again, I know practically speaking, it doesn't make sense, but I think we should. I think can we fight to figure out a way to bring that back into the Sunday experience? You know, yes, mass is going to be longer. Yes, it's going to be more full. I get all that, you know, but hello, this is super important, you know?
Right.
And so if we're important about that, can we bring that back together? And, you know, maybe this is just false hope because again, like there's no way that our parish here could do it. It's just, there's just too many people, but.
Yeah, no, I agree with you on that. And, you know, that's caused a little bit of tension at the last parish I was at because we would have the mass, we would have confirmation and Holy Communion as a part of the Sunday liturgy. Like, and we would tell the whole congregation the weekend before, we were like, hey, just a heads up, next weekend is confirmation mass at 5 p.m. on Saturday. You're more than welcome to be a part of it. But we also just want to give you that heads up logistically. And same thing with the First Communion, it would be 5 p.m. on Saturday and I think noon or 10:30 on Sunday. And we would just tell people this is what we're going to do. Now, what got hard with First Communion, and this is another thing that I think other churches, is we had to almost enter into a ticketing system because there was just not enough room for people. And then like, that's like, well, of course it's like a graduation in that sense.
Right.
So that's where the last church I was at was really great at promoting the streaming. You know, we would stream the mass for both of them. So that family that was on the ropes about whether or not to come or not could at least participate, you know, from afar. And we would have lots of people who would watch. And so I thought that was just like such a home run in regards to sacramental, making the mass a little bit more accessible for people. But that was also a conversation we had at my current church when it comes to baptisms. You know, baptisms, how often are they done, like on a Saturday morning or, you know, Sunday afternoon, like in between masses or, you know, it was kind of like, well, do we have baptism in mass? And I at first had the kind of a reaction of like, no, like that's not going to make sense to a church outsider. But then the more I thought about it, I was like, that's like a perfect evangelization tool, right? It's a great way of saying this is a huge part of our faith that you would never witness on any other day. And then it's also goes back to that, like, you know, the village raises a child mentality, which I think is great, where the whole community is there to pray over this family that is starting this journey of raising a young disciple. Mm-hmm. And so the thing I love about having the, like, if we can squeeze the sacraments into the weekend liturgy, is it encourages the rest of the congregation to be involved. And it allows the candidates or the participants to see that there's a greater church out there beyond family and friends. Mm-hmm. And let's face it, random people don't just show up to graduation. You know, it's not like you say to your wife, hey, what do you want to do this weekend? I hear, you know, San Jose University is doing their commencement. Let's go check that out because I hear they have a great speaker. You know, there's no one that does that. But like for confirmation or for First Communion, like people might seek that out because it's a chance to revisit the why behind what they do. Mm-hmm. So I think like if a parish can afford to do it, because the other factor too is like with confirmation, you got to work around the bishop's schedules sometimes. But if there is a way to make that happen, I would say weave it into your weekend mass, or at least really put a lot of effort into inviting the rest of the congregation to participate and be involved.
Yeah, like it a lot. You know, again, I think this may be a non-starter for folks, and so that's fair enough, you know. But again, I think in an ideal world, this makes sense. And so who knows? Why don't we do what Nativity does for Christmas and Easter, right? Let's just, you know, have one really big mass, rent out a big fairground or big big.
You really have to be on
the stadium.
You have to be on the bishop's calendar for sure. Sucker, you had to like book it years in advance.
Oh, how funny!
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, you know, it's true. I think, you know, that's one of the reasons why, you know, a couple of episodes ago when we were talking about Holy Week and the Triduum was like why I love the Easter Vigil. You know, it's a chance to see something different. You know, when I went to Holy Thursday Mass this year, like just seeing how my parish now does differently than my former parish versus the parish I grew up in. And there was just this part of it, though, that like the part that was beautiful about it was how they were undressing the altar, right? You know, and preparing for Good Friday services. And so there was something beautiful about that. And I think, again, with confirmation and even First Holy Communion and a baptism, it's reminding people of these different unique things that remind them of why their faith is important or it's so unique.
Yeah, for sure. And I would say, again, this goes to our second point, which we've talked about with Easter and Holy Week and Ash Wednesday and Christmas. But I think it's worth bearing and talking about again, is that, again, you, during these sacramental masses, you are going to have people who don't normally come on a regular basis. So I think it's evangelizing opportunity again, you know, not just for those that are being confirmed or those that are receiving the sacrament, but for all those that are present, right? Because again, it's kind of this cultural tradition, you know, that I invite the whole family to communion or confirmation. Good, great. Okay, so let's obviously, one, do the liturgy well, and then how do we create a welcoming environment, a welcoming experience for those who don't usually come, right? And so there's going to be folks who have no idea what the liturgy is like and when to stand, kneel, sit, you know, walk, crawl, whatever, you know. And so how are we intentional about, especially as a priest and the director of faith formation or youth ministry coordinator or whatnot, just kind of directing people and kind of quote unquote emceeing that experience so that they kind of know what's going on, so that they're not bystanders watching something, but that they are truly participants, even if they don't know what the liturgy is. And I think that's something that we just need to think through a little bit, because, and I think weddings are the same thing, quite honestly, you know, it's just add another sacrament in there. You know, it's weddings are the same thing. You get a whole bunch of people who have no idea what they're doing at a Catholic church. So,
you know. Can you imagine a wedding though at a Catholic mass, like, or, you know, like what I'm saying at the weekend liturgy, and just say, hey, welcome all visitors. And by the way, not only are you joining us for the, you know, 22nd week in ordinary time, but also for Bill and Kathy's wedding.
Now, you know, it's not going to happen. But again, really interesting idea, right? Why is that such a far-fetched thing, right? And I'm not condoning that we should do that, by the way, obviously, because I wouldn't want that for my own wedding. But if we are celebrating the bond between a man and a woman and God and supporting, consecrating this marriage, supporting this marriage in the faith, then why wouldn't we do it on Sunday, right? You know, now again, now we're getting too far. Now we're just getting crazy, you know, but the idea, the concept is the same, you know, because this is not marriage. It's not just something that me and my wife and God do together, right? But truly, like, I need my village to support me and my marriage as well. You know, and so I don't know, that's not that far flung.
Yeah.
careful what you bring up, Chris.
I do not condone that. I will not say, I will say to anyone who's thinking about that idea, do not give me credit for that.
Chris Wesley said.
Yeah.
So I mean, I think the wedding idea is a really good idea, but going back to the idea of the liturgy itself is really do it well, but hospitality is an afterthought when it comes to the sacramental masses, right?
Right. Again, right.
Let's put the lens of evangelization on here. We got people here who don't normally come. So
right.
Are we doing some sort of hospitality? I'm not talking about the reception afterwards, although that's a good idea. You know, do the reception because everybody likes cookies and punch and cake after mass. I don't care what mass it is. I'll be there, you know. But are we doing hospitality? Well, right. Usually you don't have your normal crew, you know, at the sacramental masses. You don't have your normal Sunday crew kind of doing their thing. So you have the director of faith formation. I'm thinking about First Communion. I have First Communion in my mind right now. You have the director of faith formation running around, you know, trying to organize all the kids. So that person can't do it.
Right.
You know, so I think it'd be really wise for us as the ministry leader to recognize that we're going to be enthralled in the just the prep of all this. And so let's get a team together of maybe it's some of our catechists in our program, or maybe it's other key folks, and say, can you be our hospitality team for this mass? Welcome people, give people the worship aid, you know,
right.
People know where to sit, where the reserve seating is, right? Because it's always reserved seating, you know, for those that are receiving the sacrament, to kind of, again, do like what we would do on a Sunday and make people feel welcome and warm that this is the place to be, but not make it an afterthought like we often do at sacramental masses.
Right, right.
Yeah. So
yeah, no, I definitely agree with the hospitality and, you know, it's funny you mentioned the punch and cookies. Like, I would never turn down free punch and cookies, but I'm not, like, and maybe for me it's a little bit unfair, but when I'm done with the confirmation mass or First Communion, I'm like, let's go home or let's go out to the restaurant or, you know, things like that. And, you know, that was actually something we debated with our current church about doing last year when we had confirmation. And then at my former church, it was something we did away with because it was just, we found everyone was going off to restaurants and things like that. Mm-hmm. And, but like in regards to hospitality, yeah, I definitely think you need like your key volunteers there to greet people at the door, to help them find seats, especially help them find seats. You need your top game, ushers ready to help with the seats and the collections and all those kind of things. And then, at the same time too, you know, I was thinking about the programs, you know, the programs that we give out, again, something that can easily be confused with the commencement ceremony, you know, you can use those as a way of evangelizing and saying, like, here's what the sacrament is about. Here's what First Holy Communion is about. Here's what confirmation is about. And then an idea that I kind of have, and I'm hoping to implement this upcoming year for our confirmation program, is to share in there some of the stories that kids share. You know, like for our diocese, kids have to write a letter to the bishop, but getting permission from some of those kids to take blurbs out and just say, this is how my life changed, you know, throughout the year.
Yeah.
And just so that people who are coming can see like this as a opportunity to learn more about their faith.
Yeah.
In that regards.
Yeah. Well, you treat it as a worship aid, really, right? You know, not a program per se. And so whether you have screens or not, you know, if you don't have screens, you know, put the music, put the words in this, as well as the stories, as well as, you know, this is a really good idea, and I've seen this done a lot of different places, is at while you're doing the worship aid, put the pieces in the worship aid where ritual is happening, where the sacrament is happening, and explain maybe the history, a short blurb, not a whole
right, thing. Right. Like,
why do we do this? Right. You know,
right.
As well, I love the idea of the kids' stories, right? So explain the parts of the ritual, especially that are different than what we normally do on a Sunday, in the worship aid. I think it's a really good idea. And then, you know, the other thing I did this for my wedding. My wife and I did this for our wedding, but I think you can easily do it for confirmation and whatnot, is usually we're very intentional about picking out the music for that mass. So why those songs? Well, we chose this song because it was a theme song and our theme to our confirmation retreat.
Right.
You know, and delve into what the meaning is behind it and why we did that. Again, right. Only if there's meaning behind the songs, but I know a lot of programs really think that through a little bit. It's like, well, let's use this song as a sending forth because we use it a lot as part of our program. It was the theme of the year or whatever it may be, you know, and explain some of the reasons behind the songs. And I think that's a really, really fun thing to just make it a little bit more interesting, I guess. That's the wrong word, make it more interesting. But it sheds some light a little bit more that there's intentionality around this liturgy. And it's not just another liturgy, right?
Right. Yeah. And music is definitely a key part. Unfortunately, sometimes you hit a variety of different opinions on that. But, you know, like I know there are some people who are like, oh, it's got to be more youth centric, or it's got to be what we're doing, or it's got to be this or that. But it's definitely bottom line, no matter where you land, it has to be intentional. You can't just say, hey, we're just going to do what we did earlier in the day for, you know, Sunday morning mass. Although that music would have significance and value, but it's just kind of like, how is this representing a commissioning or deepening of faith in that regards? And I know that was a huge part of the discussion for First Communion this upcoming year, is selecting songs that were more kid friendly and not necessarily like, you know, he's got the whole world in my hands, not that kind of kid friendly, but you know, songs that would be memorable for these little kids that they could belt out and sing along with, which is one of the main purposes of liturgical music. So, So for sure. So just to kind of recap, we want to know, what have you done with your certificates? You know, have you, locked it away in a safe deposit box? Or is it hanging profoundly on your, office, wall next to your diploma? Or do you not have it at all? Like, have you misplaced it? And no judgment here at all. John has lost all of his signs of being Catholic.
I have them all now. Like, oh, I've got lots of signs here.
Sure. Whitewash tombstone. But no, anyway, I'm just joking. But and then secondly, like, does your church hand out certificates or not? We'd love to just kind of do a mini poll with that. That would be fun to just kind of learn about. Secondly, you know, look at, again, how is this a commissioning? Is this something you can involve in your weekend liturgy? How are you inviting the congregation to be a part of it? You know, how are you evangelizing? How are you welcoming people into those celebrations and educating them and inspiring them to maybe go deeper in their faith? Definitely, you know, think about those things as we head into this liturgical celebration season. And also, you know, if you have questions or comments or want to share with us how you do things, just email us at questions@thechurchpodcast.org. That's questions@thechurchpodcast.org, or you can go to our website, thechurchpodcast.org. You can also reach out to me at marathonyouthministry.com. Find me on Twitter at Chris R. Wesley, as well as Instagram there. LinkedIn, which we started introducing, just Chris Wesley, and Marathon Youth Ministry for Facebook. John, where can people find you?
Yep, johnrinaldo.com as usual, and on Twitter at John Rinaldo, and Facebook, John M. Rinaldo. And again, please, you know, give us a review on iTunes or whatever platform you listen to the show on. Really, just obviously that helps. You know that routine. If you listen to podcasts, you know everybody wants reviews. So if you give us a review, you know, that would be really, really helpful. But even more importantly, look, if you dig what we're talking about here and you're finding this super helpful, share it with people, let people know, because really that organic growth is how the word's going to get out, you know, about what we do here. And Chris and I are having a lot of fun doing this. And so hopefully you guys are having a lot of fun being part of this journey with us. So again, share it if you can. We'd really appreciate it.
Definitely. And thank you always for listening. We love you guys, and we'll see you next time.